Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Hi there, and welcome. Well, guess what today is? Today is our, ready for this, 500th show. Isn't that cool? And listen, I want to thank you, my listeners, for making this possible. I enjoy doing the program, and you know, I was corrected by a recent guest. I said, you know, I'm an amateur at this, and unfortunately, I don't get to say that anymore with 500 shows under my belt, 500 original shows. So thank you for listening, and it's been my pleasure to do this. Of course, I'm not quitting my day job. This is part of how we let people know about who we are and what we do over at Holland Financial with this program. So let's go ahead and get right to it. I've got an interesting show lined up for you, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. One of the investment strategies that a lot of people have looked at, including me and my firm and how we manage money, but also individual investors who are putting their money to work in the market, one of the newer strategies, it's not brand new, but it's newer than a lot of other things, is ETF investing. Exchange traded funds, and you can do mutual funds. They are like mutual funds, but they are managed and handled differently. And so they can be a way of getting exposure to specific areas of a market or something very narrow, or they could be something that covers the whole broad market, something that is actively managed or something that is set just to track an index. So I ran across an article in Investor Business Daily the other day, and I invited the author, the journalist who had written the article, to come on the program and talk with me a little bit about how exchange-traded funds, ETFs, work, and also to address some of the myths that are out there that you may or may not have heard of, or that it may be some misconceptions out there. So our guest on the program is Trang Ho, and she is a freelance financial journalist. And more information, you'll have to listen carefully to the website, KYTRANG, T-R-A-N-G, HO, so KYTRANGHO.com, KYTRANGHO.com is a website to see her freelance work. And so let me welcome Trang to the program. Welcome, Trang.
Thank you, and congratulations on your 500th show. That's a huge milestone.
Thank you very much. It's a mouthful to say, but it has been a lot of work. And of course, I have a fantastic team supporting me in making this show possible. And one of the biggest supporters is having great guests come on the program, Trang. So I appreciate your taking time out of your schedule. Freelance work is, I'm sure, very demanding, and deadlines to meet and stories to find and uncover and interesting things to write about. So before we get into the ETF, tell us a myth, and this is a surprise pop question for Trang. She wasn't expecting this. Tell us something about freelance writing that would surprise my listeners, Trang. What would we be surprised about? The deadlines, or how hard it is to get a story, or is it easier than you would think?
I think the surprising part would be the low pay. Some of the outlets, such as Motley Fool or eHow or DocDoc, only offer $50 an article.
You're kidding.
Yes.
That's crazy.
I never will submit to that. No, I can't live on that.
I mean, you can't write. I mean, I've done some writing, certainly not to the level of, I'm sure, the amount you've done, Trang, but I've done writing. I've written a couple of books, and I do my weekly column, but there's no way if that, I mean, that's what you do for a living. There's no way that anybody, I mean, that's, wow. With the amount of time I know it takes, unless you are an incredibly fast typist and have purity of thought from the first get-go, which it takes time to develop a story properly, like the one we're going to get to. Wow. Well, listen, that is something that we did not know. And thanks for bringing that story to us.
You're welcome.
That's amazing. We need to work harder on that. Okay, so let's get into the real reason why I wanted to get you on, which is very interesting topic, and that is this exchange traded funds that a lot of people really, even though they've grown in popularity, Trang, they have no idea what they are.
Yes, there is only about 3% of households in the U.S. own ETFs.
That's amazing. Now if you had asked me to guess, I would have guessed 20-30% or something like that. So let's just boil it down for our listeners, because 97% of them said to me, we don't know what you're talking about. But So let's boil it down to its most basic function or how it's structured. Do you want to lay that out for us, Trang? What is an exchange-traded fund?
Okay, an ETF is basically just like a mutual fund. It holds a bunch of different stocks of any kind, but it trades like a stock on the exchange. And unlike a mutual fund, you could get intraday pricing. So the price at 1 o'clock could be much different than the price at 4 o'clock, whereas mutual funds just have one set price at the end of the day.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So if you wanted to have the ability to get out at any time during the day, that would be an advantage, I suppose, of the exchange-traded fund.
Correct.
Okay. But one of the big things is it may not necessarily, it's not all it's cracked up to be if you don't understand how they're traded, right?
Yes. Well, it all depends on which ETF. You know, you're completely safe if you trade the most liquid ETF, such as the PowerShares QQQ, which holds the 100 largest non-financial stocks on the NASDAQ, or the SPDR, SPY,
yeah,
which holds the S&P 500. But then there's some ETFs that are just very thinly traded. And when they're very thinly traded, they tend to have wide bid-ask spreads. And even if they hold very liquid stocks that are in the S&P 500 or the Dow, and an ETF that has wide bid-ask spreads will make you lose money as soon as you buy them, because once you buy them, and you sell them right away, you will lose the difference between what somebody's willing to pay for it and what someone's willing to buy it at.
And I think a lot of people, Trang, don't realize that they are bought and sold, and you're buying it from somebody who's willing to sell it for you for a certain price, and they're willing to buy it back from anytime you want, but it's not the same price as what they sold it to you for, is it?
Correct.
Yeah, it's, you know what it's a lot like? It's a lot like a car.
That's
a
yes.
good, you know, you buy the car. They sell it to you at whatever the price is. And let's just say you buy a car and it's $20,000, and then you drive it off the lot and you drive it back on the lot 10 minutes later. They're not going to give you $20,000 for it. I mean, they would have to take it in, because anytime they take in a car, they have to pay a price that allows them to sell it and make a profit.
Exactly. And some of these bid-ask spreads are just criminal. For example, as of today, if you look on ETF.com, the iPass Long Enhanced MSCI EFA ETN has a bid-ask spread that amounts to 95% of the share price.
Holy smokes. That's crazy.
It's insane.
Okay, so that's kind of a big one. And again, this is going to be a hard one, because, you know, some of them are going to be very economical versus others, but what people may not, I mean, going beyond that one example, it would not be uncommon for them to, if they're not careful, very easily to have a potential, you know, kind of the friction of the transaction to cost them, what, 5 to 10% if they're not careful?
Yes.
Wow.
I found in looking down that list is the vast majority of ETFs with a bid-ask spread of 1% or more, for the most part, tend to have $5 million or less in assets. There's a few here and there that have $10 million or even $100 million, but for the most part, they have less than $5
million. Okay, and that's total assets in the fund?
Correct.
Okay, so maybe a good rule of thumb, or maybe one of the first things to kind of narrow or kind of screen for exchange-traded funds if somebody wants it to be part of their portfolio, Trang, would be to look for funds of a minimum size. In your research, what do you think that should be? Is it the $100 million and up?
It just depends on the ETF.
Okay.
There are some ETFs that are very thinly traded, but for some reason, the market makers or whatever the powers that be do something to make the bid-ask spread very tight. So you just have to really look at each ETF on an individual basis, and you could do institutional quality research about ETFs on ETF.com.
That's very convenient. I mean, you need to have that. And, you know, I pulled up while we were talking, Trang, just as an example, you mentioned SPY, and I'm just looking at the bid-ask spread. It looks like it's, and this is just a quick number I'm pulling up. This could change at any time, but it's the bid, which is what? That's what they're willing to buy it from you for, right?
Correct.
Okay, that's 187.56. And then what they're asking is, which would be what they would sell it to you for, is 187.57. So it's 0.01. So what is that? Is that one? Is that what's the, what is that as a percentage? Is that 1% or is that 0.01? Is that a penny?
Yes, that's a penny.
A penny?
And that would,
okay. So that I think we could call that economical Trang, right?
Yes.
So that's an example. So some things. So the bid and ask, it's what they're willing to buy it from you for, and then what they're willing to sell it from you for. So that, so what I just did, Trang, was to demonstrate for our listeners what you're saying, that you go, when you're, and I'm doing this on Yahoo Finance, it could be wherever somebody is looking up an exchange traded fund, an ETF, they can do it just by going and doing a ticker symbol lookup.
Correct.
And then a lot of these websites will give them, give you the price, the previous close, the open, the net assets. And again, we were talking about, you know, maybe size matters, maybe it doesn't. The SPDR one, the S&P 500 SPY is the ticker. It's got a net assets of $160 billion in it.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, there's a lot there. ETF.com, of course, is another great website that people can do the research. But this information is available. The big thing, as you're pointing out, Trang, is they just got to know to look for it.
Correct.
Okay. So one of the big things to be careful with is the spreads, the bid and ask, and know what they are.
Yes.
And that actually is one of the myths that you debunk in your article that you wrote that appeared in Investor's Business Daily. I think we jumped ahead to myth number four, but that's a big one because so much of what people are trying to do with ETF investing, or at least part of it, Trang, as you know, is looking to save cost.
Exactly. That's the main point.
So be careful to not, what is the old saying, don't cut off your nose to spite your face. You know, be careful what you're looking for. Now, another big one I know that people are also, when they look at which, again, you spoke to already, is the liquidity. And one of the myths that you talk about in your article is that sometimes people think that the liquidity of the ETF itself doesn't matter as long as what's inside it's liquid. Help me understand that a little bit.
Well, ETFs basically have to be created by a market maker in batches of 50,000 shares. And what's going on under the hood is that the ETFs and the individual stocks in the underlying index that it tracks are being traded in kind.
Right.
And so if there's not enough liquidity, the market maker, for some reason, won't be able to create those blocks of 50,000 efficiently.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So it's not just the actual liquidity of the, you know, if you've got, let's say you've got the easy one we just talked about, which is SPI, the SPDR, which is the S&P 500, the 500 larger U.S. domestic corporations.
Mm-hmm.
The liquidity of an IBM or an Apple or a Google or an ExxonMobil, I think most of us would agree that those are heavily traded stocks, right?
Correct.
So it's not the liquidity of the stocks per se. It's the ability of the originator, the market maker, the company, not necessarily an individual, it's a company that is creating this fund and packaging it up. And there's got to be enough demand and enough activity to keep the money flowing.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing because a lot of times people don't look that deeply. So, okay, so to know about maybe that piece of it, then one of the other things that somebody might look for, Trang, would it be the volume of the ETF?
Volume is important because another problem is that if an ETF is too thin, most of the time I've seen this happen over and over, is that they get canceled and go to ETF heaven after a while. And so you don't want to be caught with that, because what if, you know, if you have an ETF that gets canceled and you have to sell it, then you could get hit with a taxable event.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, and just again, referring back to the SPY, which is a hugely traded ETF in the world, the volume is 85 million recently, just a rough number. Mm-hmm. So we're talking, and the average for the last 3 months is about 111 million. Those are shares trading hands. So we're talking a big volume of activity. So if that's a really really low number, And again, this is part of people doing research now that they need to look for that. Now, Trang, this is obviously one of the things that either people can do themselves or they can have an advisor do. You know, when I do this for my clients, we are doing all these screenings and things that you and I are talking about on this program. But for the average investor, perhaps, that maybe just wants to do it themselves, they need to be aware of this if they're going to include ETFs in their portfolio.
Most definitely.
Yeah, I don't want them to get in trouble with that. All right, let's do this. Let's grab a quick break. We'll come right back. Trang Ho is our guest today. The website to take a look at a lot of Trang's freelance work is KYTRANG, so KYTRANGHO.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.
Retirement planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. It also doesn't have to be in a hurry or with sales pressure. Since starting Holland Financial in 1997, it has been David Holland's mission to help individuals and couples plan their futures with personalized financial planning. David puts himself in his clients' shoes and recommends products and services he would choose for himself or his family. To learn more about Holland Financial or to schedule a one-on-one consultation with David, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back. Trang Ho is our guest, and she is helping us untangle the myths of ETF investing. KYTRANGHO.com is the website, and we're talking about the ETF myths that can trip you up. And we talked before the break about myth number one, which is the liquidity of the ETF doesn't really matter. We very quickly figured out that it can matter a whole bunch. And then we also talked about the myth of the cheapest ETFs may not necessarily be the least expensive, meaning that you may be exposed to a very significant bid-ask spread, basically the frictional cost of transacting in that ETF. Now, I know we've got two more, Trang, that I want to get to. Now, the next one is that you think you're getting diversification with the ETF, and that is going to give you more safety than stocks. So speak to me a little bit about that, maybe that misconception.
Yes, the truth is that ETFs are basically just a wrapper of their underlying stocks. So if you are investing in a very volatile sector like gold miners, social media, or biotech, those ETFs are just going to be as volatile as the stocks.
Okay. That's a great point. And, you know, you just mentioned a couple of areas where you are diversifying perhaps into a bunch of investments that may, you know, vacillate widely or all go down in value. So it's you know, diversification doesn't just mean owning a bunch of the same. Let's see, what would be a good example? If you had 100 snakes, they're all still snakes, and they could still bite you. So I guess the point is you're not getting safety just by having more than one thing inside of that ETF.
Correct, because when a ship goes down, it takes everything with it. And most stock movement is driven by the sector performance.
Good
point. For example, ETFs that hold oil. Oil stocks tend to all go down in unison, or utilities go up in unison. So it very much depends on the sector as much as the stock.
That's a great point. In fact, there is, and I'm sure you've run across this in your research and your study of this area, Trang, that there were studies done back about 20-some years ago that they were called the Brinson Biebauer studies, and they did these really smart guys did an analysis, and they figured out that over 90% of a portfolio's performance can be explained by the allocation. So that speaks right to your point that if you've got oil stocks, whether it's an exchange traded fund, the ETF, or you own 10 individual oil stocks, those things are probably going to have the same kind of response to something major happening that affects oil stocks, either supply or demand, or maybe some sort of geopolitical event or whatever the case may be. So
exactly.
To get diversification that would imbue a portfolio with safety or a less volatility, more security, then it's going to be about building a portfolio. If somebody wants to do it with ETFs, they need to get different types of ETFs. So maybe your oil and your gold ETF, but then maybe over here some utilities, maybe some large cap ETF, maybe the SPY we talked about, maybe a foreign, something that strictly follows a foreign index, building in stuff that doesn't move in lockstep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the key, and that's why you have to, you can't, you know, buying a mutual fund or an ETF doesn't necessarily give you that diversification. Very interesting. All right, let's look at this. I know you've got another myth or two. The other one, which you spoke to already a little bit, that ETFs aren't necessarily tax efficient. And you spoke about if a ETF got shut down or it got canceled, that you could end up with some significant tax consequences. But even if everything is all well and good, there can be some tax consequences that people may not realize that they would have with an ETF, right?
Correct. For example, ETFs that hold futures contracts, such as the United States Oil Fund and all of their funds, the Natural Gas Fund, the Corn Fund, whatever commodity fund, are treated as if you were investing in a limited partnership. And so when tax time comes, you get a K-1 tax form instead of a 1099. And a K-1 is a huge hassle to deal with. And they tend to be sent very late in the tax season.
Of course.
So that could delay your tax filing.
Yeah, K-1s are always, I won't say always, but they're one of the favorite things for CPAs doing taxes, that they come in late, and it's because they have to, the reason they come in late for our listeners' benefit, Trang, is that they have to wait until that corporation or entity, whatever it is, a corporation or LLC or however it's structured, issues the K-1, which is the distribution of the owner, that owner's share of profits or losses, and it's got a lot of detail to it. And so one of the pieces of this is, if you're going to own an ETF in a non-qualified taxable account, regular money account, I tend to call it, Trang, a brokerage account, then there could be tax consequences that may be a lot more trouble than that ETF is giving, benefit that an ETF is giving you. Now, over on IRAs, we could kind of, you know, eliminate this issue because the IRA is going to be a tax-deferred entity or account holder anyway.
Correct. And another problem with these commodity ETFs that hold futures contracts is that they may not track the price of oil or corn or whatever the way you think they would because of a phenomenon in the futures market called contango and backwardation. And contango is when you have to, these ETFs basically have to buy contracts of the futures of oil or corn or whatever. And then they have to roll over the contract every month. So they buy for instance, right now they would be buying a June contract, and then so they have to sell the May contract.
Okay.
And every time they do that, if the June contract costs more than the May contract, then you're going to lose money.
Yeah.
Even though oil is going up and you are right on the direction of oil.
How about that? That's wild. So would it be fair to say that this that ETFs are not for sissies?
No, I mean, exactly.
They can get very complicated.
Exactly. And another thing that people may not know is that these ETFs in the fine print, if you read through the whole prospectus, which no one ever does.
No, nobody reads them.
Is that they say that they will distribute income, but that income doesn't go to you. It's called phantom income.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then you will get taxed on that phantom income, even though you did not actually receive the income.
Even if they reinvest it and they're keeping it in operation for the fund or for the underlying stocks, and even if they end up, like you said, with the forward and the current contracts with the oil you mentioned before, they may end up losing that income by virtue of that transaction, and it may just be pure tax consequence with no economic benefit to you.
Exactly.
Ooh, got to be careful. All right, let me grab a quick break. Trang Ho is our guest, and we're going to grab a quick break. We'll be right back.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your portfolio prepared for such a correction? How about inflation? What's your plan for when a gallon of gas or gallon of milk costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has answers to questions just like these and practical steps you can take to help mitigate these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And welcome back. Trang Ho's been online with us and a guest, and the website is kytrangho.com. And stop by her website. You can take a look at a lot of freelance stories that she's written for us and a lot of good stuff there. And I've got several I've already picked out that I want to read and get a good take on. And we may have to have you back, Trang, to talk about some of them. But so to sum up with the ETF story that you wrote about the myths and some of the things we've talked on today's program, you know, ETF investing, I said kind of kiddingly that it's not for sissies, but it really is. These really can be very sophisticated and complicated products.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that people would be well served to be careful. We realize, of course, also, Trang, that nobody's going to read these these prospectuses. I refer to them as either as doorstops that people use to hold a door open because they're about an inch thick, and they're written by attorneys for attorneys, right? I mean, that's really what they're not a document that any investor really ever reads.
No one ever reads them.
even if they want to read them, they're really. I have to read them, and my investment team has to read them, but most regular people don't. Trang, I want to thank you for being on the program. I think that this is a really interesting subject that people just, again, need to be careful. If they're going to do it, they might want to take a look at having an advisor help them or at least steer them in the right direction. And I'd love to have you come back, Trang, and talk about another subject with us.
I would love to come back.
All right. We'll have you do that. And again, kytrangho.com is a website, kytrangho.com. Trang, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.